listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 178 of the CD Baby DIY Musician podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me is Chris.
Hello.
Should I be saying our last names? I'm Kevin Bruner, by the way. That's Chris Robley.
Yeah, why not?
Sure, okay. I'm Kevin Bruner, and this is Chris Robley. There we go.
Hello, Kevin Bruner.
Hello. I've had an exciting couple weeks since we talked last.
You had your writing retreat, right?
Yeah. I went to Florida for a little small town poets writing retreat. It was very, very productive, and so productive that there have been very few pictures online of it because we weren't goofing around on our phones. We were actually writing music.
Wow, how old school of you! You weren't concerned about social media.
No, I was concerned about making sure we used the time to get some really good songs out, and we did. It was a great experience. We hadn't really done that since back in the days when we were doing it full time, where we had spent that much time just writing new music together.
Did you start from scratch on everything, or did people bring in little like bits of ideas and riffs? And
we were already exchanging ideas, and so some of the songs were some rough ideas that we had just sort of jammed on before, real briefly, but really didn't have time to just work them out some. And then some were more complete, but it was great to actually, you know, arrange and exchange ideas as a band. But that's how the band has always sort of worked. Someone's always brought like a musical idea to the table. It wasn't like ever a situation where we're just kind of staring at each other in a room waiting for somebody to do something. But that was great. We were in a barn that one of the tack rooms had been converted to a studio. And I have to tell you that the chickens and the guinea fowl were being very rude at times. Especially the guinea fowl, they like bark like dogs, and they would stand right outside the door, and the whole band would be playing, and we could hear them over top of it.
Were they interjecting their melodic ideas?
I think so. So even when you try and seclude yourself out on a farm, there's challenges with the neighbors. So that was a lot of fun and very productive. I think we've got some really great songs that we're going to be releasing in 2017. And so that was good. Still coming off of that, and excited to get that record going and heading into Christmas break, planning on working on a lot of guitar parts and other stuff while I'm not at work.
Cool. My big exciting thing for the week was I saw Rogue One yesterday.
Oh, yes. What did you think?
I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was good, too.
I mean, especially I'm not going to ruin anything, but the last, like, 3 minutes.
Yes.
If you know what I mean, there's a dark room. Yeah.
Yes.
That was pretty, it was worth the wait.
Yes. Yeah. I thought it delivered. It made me start thinking about the podcast we did a while ago about the mistakes of what Don't artists can learn from epic mistakes is I think what we titled it. But I think next round of conferences, I'm going to pitch that as a topic title for a panel or a session.
Yeah, and you have a great slideshow to accompany it.
Yeah. And also I think that the concurrent releases, because we did that right before The Force Awakens came out, the releases since Force Awakens and this one, I think, have only bolstered my position in that podcast. So if you want to listen to that podcast, it's, you know, it's Star Wars time again. We should probably post it online again today. We recorded it, I think, December or November of last year, and it's very well thought out. It wasn't just taking random jabs at somebody because we didn't like what they did with the prequels. So you could check that out as well. All right. Well, today we have our listener feedback show, listener question show, whatever you want to call it. We've been collecting calls and emails for a while now, and we are going to do that today. We're going to go through all those questions and answer them right here on the podcast, so you don't have to be wondering what the answer is anymore. We will answer it today on the podcast. And
are we skipping the news section?
No, we're going to do that. We're going to get to the news.
Okay, all right, good.
No, we're going to get to the news.
I thought you were insinuating that nothing newsworthy has happened.
Oh, lots of newsworthy has happened. Lots of newsworthy has happened. But first, I just wanted to mention that since this is a listener feedback show, it's too late to get your call or a question in for this episode, but you can always call 360-524-2209 and leave a message or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, and we will answer your question either on the show or if it's email. I always email everybody back, usually always email everybody back right away with the answer, whether or not it gets on the show. But that being said, Chris, you're so excited for the news. Let's get to the news.
All right.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, there's been lots of developments in the music news lately. Pandora has finally announced their paid streaming service. It will be called Pandora Premium, and this is what they had to say about it on their blog. It is a completely reimagined music service that redefines what premium could and should be. Pandora Premium is designed to open up a world of music completely unique to you. The upcoming features tune into each listener's individuality and leverage our deep knowledge of musical data. It will be an effortless and flexible experience for all subscribers. We can't wait to start rolling it out to listeners in early 2017. Well, a recent report points to how much it actually takes to break an artist. So how much should you start saving in order to promote your next release? Well, according to a recent report by the IFPI, it typically costs $500,000 to $2 million to break in a major market. This includes investments like artist advances, recording costs, videos, tour support, marketing and promotion, and more. So if you want to go big like a major, best set that fan funding campaign at $2 million just to be safe. There are changes ahead for Bandpage. As you remember, the service was bought by YouTube a while back. This left artists wondering what would become of the service. Well, now we know. As of March 1st, 2017, Bandpage is discontinuing many key features that artists have used for years and migrating others to YouTube as it pivots to serve as a profile and direct-to-fan tool for the video platform's many creators. Bandpage users will no longer have access to the Bandpage editor, and these key features will be discontinued. So here's the list of features. Website widgets, Bandpage.com public-facing profiles, the Bandpage Facebook application, Bandpage store and event features, Facebook and Twitter integrations, custom websites, account creation, and ability to add new admins. Basically, it looks like all the features that won't end up integrated with YouTube will be going away. Well, some big news on the home front here at CD Baby, as we now offer the simplest way to legally sell cover songs. With CD Baby's cover song licensing, you can license and distribute your cover song to platforms like iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, etc. Manage it all from one account, and CD Baby will handle all of your accounting and mechanical royalty payments forever. You just pay a one-time licensing setup fee of $14.99 per song. That's in addition to your music distribution fee. CD Baby will secure the required mechanical license and pay all mechanical royalties you owe to the publisher for sales of that cover song. The best part is there is no annual fee. So once you distribute that cover song, you never have to worry about whether or not you've paid the required license fee. It's all handled. Well, that's the news. Lots of exciting things happening.
Yeah, I mean, with the last item, I think that's really going to be awesome for artists who are used to having to get a bundle of DPDs or, you know, the mechanical licenses for downloads, and then they have to kind of count the downloads as they come through, and then a year later renew. It's, you know, so taking all that headache out of it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's something we've been asked, I think, since I started working at CD Baby. People asked us to do this, and it just took the right timing and the right method to get this done. And it's integrated. And so for right now, it's only for single releases. But that's the main way I think artists are using it. But we are working towards getting the full album featured in place so people can do it with albums. But it makes it so easy to just release a cover song. Cover songs are one of the coolest ways to get fans. It's interesting looking at what we, with Small Town Poets, our Christmas releases, the number one song off of both our Christmas releases combined that's just getting streamed and downloaded a ton is a cover song. And this makes it super easy to do that. It's a great way for you to reach into an audience. So I'm really excited about that. So it's just integrated in the sign-up process. So if you're releasing a single and it's a cover, it'll ask you a couple questions, and then you'll fill out the info needed, and you'll be all set. The Pandora one is funny. As I was reading the news announcement, it started sounding like it was an ad for a yoga studio or something. It was like, it'll be effortless and flexible experience.
And they also used the re, what would that be, a prefix a lot, like reimagined, renewed, whatever. But
music streaming like you've never seen it before.
Well, I mean, it's, hyperbolic language, but I am kind of excited to check it out. And it's integrated, they say it'll be integrated with their existing, non-interactive radio service, and it's still going to have the thumbs up and thumbs down. So as you're streaming on demand, you can still be kind of instructing the algorithm or whatever is instructing the genome. I forget what they call it, but, I'm excited to check it out. I'm also kind of happy that now there's Amazon sort of fully into the streaming thing. Pandora is finally getting in. It'll be interesting to see what effect those tensions have on Spotify and Apple Music.
I think it's going to be good. In fact, Pandora is one of the ones I've actually been waiting for and very interested in, because even though this announcement is very hyperbolic, I think the way they have been collecting data, it could be something that does provide extra features that are really cool that other services may not have been, especially about listening habits. Like, here's your past listening habits. The one thing that concerns me about all these things, and it happens with Netflix, is that you can get really locked into where the system thinks you only like three things, and that's all you ever see. And Netflix, apparently, you can Google, there's like all these secret codes. They're not like coupon codes. They're genre codes that can get you deeper into their catalog, because a lot of times when you're looking at Netflix, it seems like, I can only find 50 things here. It's because the system's trying to curate for you where, when you want to go deeper and just really find some stuff, you have to find a different route.
Yeah, and God forbid you're logged into Netflix under your own user profile and you dial up a kid's movie or a kid's show, because then it's going to be recommending Masha and the Bear. And
it sounds like
Mickey's,
you've been
once
in my Netflix profile. I promise, yeah. It's my girls that are doing that.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what they do. I think it could be cool, and especially because they have been offering the AMP tools to artists, the artist marketing platform, which I've started using and experimenting with, and I know you have as well. And I'm hoping that they extend those things into the streaming service. And I think that the tension is good. I'm happy that the days of the soul king are gone, because I thought the king was getting lazy.
Right.
And so it's good to have competition and more services. And, I've switched to using Spotify, and I've been really excited about Spotify and playlisting. I've been trying a bunch of stuff with playlists and have had some success and failures and some interesting observations. And you and I are going to do we've decided it's probably going to be a two-parter podcast, probably the first one back for the new year, about Spotify playlisting, because we haven't really done that on the podcast yet.
No, and I'm curious to hear what happened with your playlists.
Yeah, so I'm going to save it. I'm not going to give it away. And for those of you that were big Bandpage users, when I read this news announcement, the first thing that popped into my mind was, wasn't Bandpage the place that you went to in order to get merch on Spotify? And I hadn't really heard much about it because I hadn't tried to put merch on Spotify. And they were, and they discontinued that. When YouTube bought them, that service was a part of the thing that was being pulled. But there's a new company called Merch Bar, and I was just looking at this last night. Merchbar.com, I believe, is what it is, that is the place that you have to have your merch on to get on Spotify. I need to investigate on how you actually do it. From their website, they just say, hey, you just sign up here and list your merch, and then we'll connect it to Spotify. It seemed a little overly simplistic.
Too easy, right?
So that's, if you're wondering about that, that's how you do that. And so lots of interesting things happening as we close out 2016. I'm also, Chris, I think we just need to do a big episode just on streaming in general, because I haven't crunched all the data yet, but something interesting has happened this Christmas season. You know, with the Small Town Poets, we have three recent albums. Two of them are Christmas. I've mentioned on the podcast many times, but what was interesting is it seems like we are getting far more traction with pretty much zero promotion this year in a streaming world than last year we were, when things were still like, you know, 50-50. I don't know what you would consider last year. And I probably did more promotion for it last year. But this year, we've had some things very tied to playlists really start driving some serious plays for us and activity. And it's been exciting to watch. And it's been super exciting to watch inside the CD Baby trending reports, because I've been seeing people add us to their playlists. I've been seeing daily streams of our music, and it just makes it really exciting to see that, hey, I sent an email to all our fans and we picked up a couple more playlists and things like that that you can now see inside your CD Baby account. So that's been a lot of fun. I'm going to hopefully crunch all the data. And
so when you're saying that, is it most noticeable with your holiday music, right?
Yeah, and the thing is with the holiday music, why I think it's an interesting test case is because it's so seasonal that things... you have a season where people are going to engage with it for, by and large, you know, there's people that love Christmas music year round, but by and large, we see a massive spike between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and with less promotion, we're seeing a bigger spike this year. That's what's interesting to me. So I need
to, cool. If you could measure, I think it would be very difficult to do, but to see what effect that has on your, you know, your sort of non-seasonal music, your original albums.
Yeah. Well, the bigger albums are on a label, and I don't have access to that data.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So you can only basically compare it to that one other new original album.
In fact, I bet I have better data than they do. But we'll see. We'll see. So... yeah, lots of exciting things as we head into 2016 or 2017. I'm really excited about what I'm seeing. So nothing but optimism here. And, you know, and by the way, just I will say that we weren't selling less downloads this year. In fact, I think we were selling more downloads this year. And like I said, less promotion, but clearly seeing some serious traction on streaming. So,
well... maybe we need to do a three-parter.
Maybe it'll just be a four-parter.
Maybe all of 2017's podcast will just be about...
yeah, maybe we can get that Spotify endorsement for the podcast. All right. Maybe we can just get them to list us in the Spotify podcast section.
Start.
That's one of my goals for 2017. All right. Well, it's always exciting when we get calls and questions from you, our listeners, just to hear what you're thinking about, what's on your mind. And also, it's always exciting when people start calling from all over the world. I don't think I had anybody really mention, outside of the U.S. if they were from outside of the U.S. But we sometimes we have people in Afghanistan. There's somebody in Afghanistan who listens to the podcast that's emailed multiple times. And Australia, it's just crazy how many people are listening all over the world. And it's super exciting just to hear what artists in other cultures and other regions of the world, what things are on their mind and the issues they face, and just, you know, to hear what it's like to be in their shoes. So we've got lots of calls and emails. Where do you want to start? You want to start with an email or a call, Chris?
Let's do a call.
All right. We're going to start with a call from Jeff. Here we go.
Hey, guys. My name's Jeff Rose, and I was just listening to your Thanksgiving podcast in the car here, and I thought I'd ask you a question that popped in my mind. As far as releasing holiday music if you're like in between an album cycle or whatever. So my question is this. I am part of two bands, really, that kind of share two different brands. So same musicians, for the most part. Well, shared musicians. Anyway, my main band is called Merlot Embargo. It's headed by my wife and I. We have, you know, music out there. We're also a part of a Christmas group called the Jingle Boys, which has been doing holiday DIY release for years now. And so I'm more curious on your thoughts on, because the Jingle Boys already release a lot of holiday music and we share the same musicians that we utilize in Merlot Embargo, the main non-Christmas band. What are your thoughts on kind of releasing a song maybe as under both brands? Has that been done? Have you guys ever heard of that? Anyway, just curious about what you think about that. So thanks. Enjoy the podcast and keep it up, guys. Appreciate everything you do. Thanks. Bye-bye.
So what are your thoughts, Chris?
Okay, well, if he's talking about releasing the same song separately under two different artist names, it sounds like a metadata nightmare. But what I would say is, what about releasing it almost as if it's a collaboration between the brands? So it could be, I forget what was his original, whatever that, and the Jingle Boys or something like that. So that's sort of bringing them together in a way, but you know, not making it confusing for the world of data.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend releasing the exact same master recording under both brands, because like you're saying, if it goes up on YouTube, they're always going to be in conflict with each other, because it's going to be seen it is the same track. And so it's going to be like, hey, why are the Jingle Boys and this other artist claiming the same song? They're exactly the same, so we can't monetize this till you sort it out. So I wouldn't recommend doing that. You know, a collaboration, I think, is a good idea. If you do have fan bases that are similar, that know that people, there's crossover between the two groups, a broader collaboration might work. If there's not sort of crossover with the fan bases, I wouldn't do it at all. I would just pick one or the other, or do a remix or something. I'd make them distinct. That would be my take. So if there's no benefit, like building each other's fan bases up in a strategic way, then I wouldn't do it. If it's just like, hey, we have this track, we played guitar, bass, and drums and sang on it, there's also this other singer, I think it can get confusing.
Yeah, I mean, and they might already be doing this, but like, if there is such a, you know, two people of the one band or in the other, then why not just release it under the Jingle Boys Christmas brand and keep that consistent, but then, you know, send an email or promote it on social. Like, I feel like you can still direct your fans of your original music to this other project that's related.
Yeah, agreed.
And then those that are interested will check it out, and those that aren't, they'll just wait for the next email that's about your own music.
Yeah, you never want to encourage confusion, because it just gets confusing. That's why they call it confusion.
Thank you for that linguistic lesson there.
Yeah. That's free of charge. All right. We'll go to an email here. Hey, Kevin and gang. This is Colin, the drummer from DeLune Deluge. I'm a new listener to the podcast and have really enjoyed all of the new knowledge I have gained from it. So thank you so much for putting your time into it. is greatly appreciated. I do have a two-part question, though, for you. First, we write all of our music ourselves and paid for the recording, mastering, production, and distribution ourselves. Does this mean we own the publishing rights to it and just the rights to our music in general? And is there any paperwork that needs to be filed out to prove such? Secondly, if we sign up for CD Baby Pro, do we still need to file the paperwork with the United States Copyright Office in order to have the official copyright to our music? We want to start exploring sync licensing and be able to gain all of the perks from going with CD Baby Pro, but I really want to be sure that we have all of our bases covered so that we can start to explore these things without fear of someone taking advantage of us should anything work out. Thank you so much for taking the time to read this, and I apologize for it being so long. Best wishes, Colin.
That's a good series of questions that we could spend 20 minutes on probably, but
yeah. So if you write all the original music, yes, you own it all.
Although to speak to the first part of his question, even though you've paid to record it, that doesn't have anything to do with the ownership of the composition itself. Those are separate rights, but it sounds like if you wrote the music and paid to record it, then you own all the rights that are involved. The master recording, which is the recording of that particular version of the song, and then the song itself, which could be recorded by any number of artists.
Correct. And, you know, the only thing I would say on top of that particular portion of the question, it's important that you also determine percentages of songwriting contribution. That could be different depending on who your band is and the makeup of it and the agreements you have, but it's important to make sure that you have that all ironed out as well. As far as your second part of the question, CD Baby Pro does not file your music for copyright. That's something you have to do on your own. When you write a song and it's in some sort of tangible form, you immediately have copyright under the law. But if you want the full protection under the law, you need to register it. So that's what the Copyright Office is for. So you want to register your copyrights. In that way, you have the full weight of the law behind you.
And there's two different kinds of copyright forms, registration forms you can fill out. And I think it's the SR form. You should check me on this. But there's one form you can fill out that covers you for both the recording and the composition. So maybe just do a little I'm pretty sure it's the SR form.
Yeah, there's several ways you can do it. In fact, we were talking about having someone at the DIY Musician Conference in 2017 in Nashville come out and just walk through the step-by-step processes, because I always get confused when I get on their website. There's so many different things. And strategically, there's some things that you can do. Like if you have 50 single releases, you can wrap them up as a album. Or there 50 may be too many, because I think there is a cutoff on how many you can wrap up into one group. But you can wrap up a bunch of songs as a release and copyright them all together and save money. You can copyright it as an album. And you want to copyright it. Yeah, I think it's Form SR because it's a sound recording. But just go to copyright.gov.
It is copyright.gov. Okay.
Yeah, copyright.gov.
When you do one of those sort of bulk forms, it's going to cover you for the sound recording as well as the composition. It can get a little tricky if you're in a band that where the splits, you know, let's say one song was 50-50 between you and the singer or something, and then the other one, another song is like co-written by four different members. If the splits keep changing from song to song, it gets complicated. But if it's if you have a simple setup where it's like a four-piece band and you're all going to take 25%, and it's uniform throughout every song you ever write, then that's very easy to do.
Yeah, the more complex it gets, that's when it gets, you know, you start having to do some trickery. Not necessarily trickery, but it becomes more forms and different things, especially like what you're saying. If it's straightforward, you can wrap it all up together, say it's all equal, and it's really easy to copyright.
Yeah, and then once you've done the copyright registration, as far as CD Baby Pro goes, just make sure you've got those splits all lined up for that as well. And there's a small charge, additional charge for each writer that we're going to be collecting publishing royalties for. But, as long as you've got your splits worked out, that's pretty easy in terms of the sign-up process as well.
All right. Well, thanks for that email, Colin, and feel free to send more if you have more questions. All right, let's go back to the calls. We've got a call from John.
Hey, guys, it's John Tice calling from Harbor Drive Hookup out of St. Cloud, Minnesota here. I just want to say thank you guys so much for providing such a wealth of information. About a year ago, my wife and I decided that we wanted to take our music career more seriously, and we like doing that a lot better than our video production company, so we actually decided to make the switch, and I discovered your podcast right around that same time, and I've got completely caught up, and I was like, oh, as soon as I get caught up, I'm going to call in, so this is my call in, but I just, like I said, there's so much awesome information I've been forwarding to you guys, everybody, so I want to say thank you. One thing that I wanted to comment on was the photography thing. As somebody who was a photographer, a video guy, you know, what she said about that was, oh, don't go on Craigslist looking for that guy, but you know, you're going to get mixed results with that, but I want to say don't ignore that because I was that guy that was out there putting out quality work that needed to get exposure that was doing that, and I was able to start a company and all that. So don't write those people off. They're out there to do photo and video for you and stuff, and so you see a lot of good stuff come through the pipeline. Also, there's a lot of us that aren't playing traditional venues, too. We stumbled into the brewery crowd scene here. We do Americana music and stuff like that. And so we stumbled into the breweries, which are huge out here. And I know you guys talk about those out there. And the way they are here is they're not traditional music venues. They don't do music. They don't have a stage. They don't have a PA most of the time. And we're showing up and we're playing shows there. And there's no, it's always guaranteed for us. We've been able to make a decent living off doing that and assisted living, which is another huge thing for us too. We do a bunch of, again, it doesn't work for every genre, but as far as the brewery goes, it's pretty crazy that we've, they're not music venues. Like I said, you have to bring everything, but we've been able to get guaranteed everywhere we go. We've done close to 300 shows in the last 3 years, and we've only done one or two where we actually didn't know how much we were making that night. So we've been doing a ton of shows with guarantees and putting out a tip bucket, and making, you know, $100 an hour for the two of us, which is pretty good money. So, and I'm getting close to the end of my time, but yeah, thanks a lot, and I appreciate it so much for you guys having all this information out there. The one thing I'm really disappointed in is that you haven't had the Bolt back as a special guest. I know he's busy, can't join back, whatever, but bring the Bolt back for one episode. Thanks again, John Tice, Harbor Drive Hookup. You guys keep up all the great work. You can check us out at harbordrivehookup.com or Facebook. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll keep listening. Thanks, guys.
All right, I guess we're going to need to get the Bolt back.
Oh, yeah, we should.
Well, you had a lot of good things in there. First up, the comment, I guess, you know, Becky Yee, the photographer that we had on the podcast, and she's also come out to our conference, mentioned not messing with folks on Craigslist. And, you know, I agree with John's comment that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily write off anybody on Craigslist right away. It's just buyer beware. You know, there are a lot of folks like John mentioned that are trying to build their portfolio and are good and will do some work for you relatively cheaply. And so that's something to be, you know, to consider. It's just, you just need to be aware of what you're getting into and do a good job vetting folks. But the non-traditional venue stuff, I always find interesting.
Yeah, I was appreciating that comment because I think a lot of times when you go into a place like that and you're good, you actually have more of an impact. But it's kind of like what you talked about in your keynote at the conference, like being in an unexpected place. And maybe a brewery is not totally unexpected for having music, but if it's not a traditional venue, then you have even more of an opportunity to turn someone's ear and make fans, you know, in that way where the typical venue-going crowd can be a little jaded.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I think if you go in knowing what your audience, the state your audience is going to be in, meaning they're not there to sit there and stare at you. That's okay. It's just recognize that, and how are you going to rise above that challenge and in a way that caters to providing an enhanced experience for them, you know, someone who's just going out to a brewery to maybe have a burger and some beer, and then there's this band playing. So how do you intersect with them in a way that enhances their experience and isn't intrusive?
And those gigs can be a lot of fun. Like if you know you're, you know, essentially glorified background music, then like you're free in a certain way. And a lot of times if I go and I know that's the setting, I tend to perform in a way that I feel like is ends up turning it into a listening room experience accidentally, or, you know, not accidentally, but yeah, anyways, I don't know exactly what I'm saying, but they're very rewarding experiences when it goes well.
Yeah. And hey, John, if you have any feedback about approaching these breweries on some tips on negotiating, I'd love to hear them, since you said that you've only played a couple gigs where you didn't get a guarantee. I know a lot of people would probably make the mistake of walking into this situation assuming it's not a venue. They don't want me in the first place. They're doing me a favor, and so I'm not even going to ask for money. But I'd be curious to see how you've approached them and any feedback that you have on doing that successfully.
So, yeah, that just reminded me of something that, Gregory Hyde said at our conference, which I forget if I've mentioned on the podcast or not, but I thought it was so simple but so brilliant. When you're negotiating the terms of a show, you're talking about a guarantee, and they say, you know, well, how much do you charge? He always gives a figure, like a solid rate, but then he immediately follows up with a question. So, you know, he'd say, I'm $150 an hour. Is that in your budget? So then if it's not in their budget, he hasn't just said, I'm $150 an hour, and they're like, oh, sorry, we can't afford it. It keeps the conversation going, and they might say, oh, that's great. Or, I don't know. I'm not sure we could do that. But then that gives him a chance to still kind of work for the gig and say, well, maybe I could do it for $100. How's that? So anyways, I thought that was a good, simple tip. Just ask the question.
Yep. Yep. All right. We've got lots more. So let's keep it rolling. Here we go. This one's a little bit longer of an email, but I'm going to read the whole thing because I think it makes sense. It says, hey, Kevin, I'm Brian Allison. I just listened to your podcast number 169 with Kathy Heller about sync licensing. I've been to both CD Baby conferences, and I was super inspired both years. Your keynote, Cutting Through the Noise, was very inspiring and a great start to this year's conference. This year, I was really focusing on the different sessions about pursuing music full time. That being said, I quit my job that Tuesday after the conference. Having 4 kids and a very supportive wife, I knew it was time to just go for it and show my kids to always follow your dreams. Things have been pretty good. Just working on gigging smaller shows, house concerts, and try and release a new single a month. To get to the point of this email, I recently got offered to work with Go DIY Records, a music licensing company. I wanted to get your opinion and advice from you, if you wouldn't mind. I own the rights to my music and have a couple co-writers on a couple songs, but they don't want any rights to my songs, but they want to split any placements 50-50. And when he's saying, but they don't want any rights, he's saying the licensing company, not the co-writers. But they want to split placements 50-50 and $25 setup fee to start and a $15 monthly fee, no contract. I'm not sure if that's fair or not for any other companies that I come across. I don't know so much about sync licensing, so this might help me get started into that side of music, kind of how Kathy started out. I just don't want to get burned. Any advice is appreciated, or even if there is recordings of sync sessions from this year's conference, and he gives his website, and thanks for your time and all that. So I emailed Brian back. First off, when I was reading this email, it's like, I quit my job right after the conference. I was like, oh no, where's this email going?
Look what you guys got me into.
My life is in shambles now. I think it's great that he's just like going for it, and it seems to be working out. His wife's supportive, and so all the best to him. I did give him feedback about Go DIY Records. I told him to stay away from this type of deal, and there's a couple reasons why. One, 50-50, that's going to be a pretty normal starting point for a licensing company. When you get to licensing companies that have very small catalogs, and by small catalog, I'm talking about 200 artists in their catalog, maybe, you know, 10, 20,000 tracks. Those people are going to take less, but they're only going to accept very few artists that they think, without a shadow of a doubt, that they can get a placement. And way back in the day, I've had somebody on the podcast in this kind of situation, and they were getting, multiple placements, a month this artist for like 10 grand. This one company they were in really specialized in movie trailers. So in those kind of situations, you'll see companies typically take a little less. But I do not think it is definitely not the norm, and I don't think it's worth it to pay any sort of setup fee to join a licensing company, and definitely not a monthly fee.
No, that's what that one really put the flags up.
And the reason being is that now their focus is about building a catalog to get artists to pay that monthly fee. That's how they're making their money. You want the licensing company to be making their money from placements, and you want them to give you an honest opinion about the ability to place your music. Now, on the there are companies that have very large catalogs that pursue licensing in different ways, and those are usually going to be placements that pay less, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're going to be hypercritical of your music. They'll accept more music than the boutique licensing company that's getting a lot of high dollar placements. But, you know, definitely I would never pay a $15 monthly fee. If I'm paying a monthly fee, they better give me reports about how they're trying to advance my music. Otherwise, what am I paying for? You know, they need to, it's their job to deliver placements, and it's their job to get my music in front of people. And I'm fine if, you know, licensing companies, it's not like they can constantly pitch your music. They have to find right opportunities. They're not the ones determining the music need. But if they know there's no need for my music and they're still taking $15 a month, I think that's wrong. So that's my opinion.
I agree.
I think he decided against it. That was his response to me.
Oh, so he wrote you back? That's good.
Yeah. So let's go back to the calls. We've got Matt with a question.
Hey guys, this is Matt from Las Vegas. I'm an indie rock project, electronica project under the name The Second Spirit. I had a question. It is song previews or full length streams? That is my question. What is the way to go these days? Because Bandcamp only allows full streams. You guys have the option for both. And then I'm wondering, should I even put my stuff on SoundCloud? Because they don't do any revenue generation or anything, so I don't know. But this is the thing. I have a sub 100 following, so I'm just starting out. I just released an album with you guys, my first album. I'm just wondering, and you guys have been great, really helped me a lot, all my questions and everything. So song previews or full streams on my website, through you guys, online, which way do you think is the best way to sell music? Thanks, guys. Bye.
What's your take, Chris?
So I feel like since we're in a world where we can get access to any song for free, or, you know, for a small subscription fee, I would just put it all up there because, you know, I think that's the expectation for one, but let's say you only have the 30-second sample that someone's really into, and it's just about to get to, I don't know, the end of the chorus and go back into the verse, and that's the that could be the moment that really, like, hooks someone, but they can't get to it because suddenly 29 seconds is nearing, and then, like, I don't know. I just feel like the expectation is there for the whole thing, and it also gives you the chance to kind of show what you have, and why be stingy about it?
Yeah, I don't know that there's any sort of proof out there or study that anyone's done saying that a full-length stream on a sales page deters a sale. I know at cdbaby.com you can turn that on and off, but we've never really looked at the data to see, like, I mean, it'd be hard to tell, like, did this album sell less because it had full-length streams? I mean, because you, unless you could A-B it, you wouldn't know. You'd have to have the exact same page set up with samples and splitting the fan base to both pages and seeing what happens with the sales.
Right. And I have never heard of anyone just sort of squatting on a product page on cdbaby.com and just streaming an album day after day. So,
yeah, although that does remind me of the episode of The Office where Michael Scott breaks up with his girlfriend and he keeps hitting play on the sample. And it keeps looping, and Dwight asks him, why don't you just buy the whole thing? And he's like, I don't need the whole thing. I just need a taste. Because he just wants to hear the weepy part.
Taste of the heartbreak, right?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think it's one of those things where if someone's at a page where the expectation is that they're there to buy, I don't think a full-length stream deters that. Now, if you're sending people to streaming sites and then wondering why they're not going back a roundabout way to Amazon to buy it, that's because you sent them somewhere else. So I think if you're sending people in a place where the expectation is they're going to buy, that the length of the stream isn't going to affect it. I know in the emails I've been sending to our fans, I've been giving the option of here's where you can stream it, here's where you can download it, and here's where you can get the CD, because there's still people that want all those different options. So just making it clear to them, I think, is helpful. And then their expectation when they get to that page where they click, oh, I want to get the CD, they're not going to not buy the CD because there was a full-length stream there.
Yeah, and this is also like, in a way, a small, you could compare it to windowing in terms of people keeping music off of Spotify or Apple Music. Like, I know we talk about that a bunch too, but that never makes sense to me either, because as a Spotify user, I want to go and listen to your whole album. Like, and I'm pissed if you just gave me two songs and now I have to go and download the rest because I don't like downloading music anymore. So,
all right, here's another email. This is our last email. Then we got a few more calls to round it out. I was listening to your tour tips episode, and you guys talked about a band that looked into where their listeners were and toured accordingly. What if I don't have a large amount of listeners? Is setting up shows that are an average of 5 hours away from each other and putting locals on the bill safe enough? And the band's name is All Nighter. They didn't put their name with it. Chris, what's your thoughts?
I think it's one of those things that depends on the band. Like, if you guys have, I'm assuming guys, whatever, if you have time off and it's not like a giant financial burden to go have an adventure every few weeks or months to do something like that, why not go do it? It sounds fun. If you're really, you know, trying to work on a budget and make the most use of a limited amount of time, maybe 5 hours is kind of far, and stay within, I don't know, 2 hours or something, and maybe pick 5 to 10 markets that are really close to home that you can hit more frequently. It's tough to answer without really knowing, like, the setup of your band and what your take on money and time is.
Or where they're at. Like, to me, 5 hours seems really long. I know up here in the Northwest in Portland, Oregon, it can be a challenge because there's not a lot of places that are under the five-hour mark. There is Seattle, and there's, where the University of Oregon is, a big college town called Eugene, and not a whole lot more in 5 hours. So it can be challenging based on where you're at. But I would say this. It's been a theme, especially in the earlier episodes of the podcast, where people had mentioned, like, working out concentric circles from the middle and starting out in your city. Maybe if it's a huge city, maybe just starting out in your part of the city and then trying to build out from there. So you're building a fan base that's growing as you grow out. And so you're not just taking random stabs in the dark. Some of those random stabs in the dark can be huge successes. I don't want to say that they'll always be failures, but it's a matter of, if you're worried about expenses, about, you know, making it work, then that can be a hit and miss situation.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the concentric circles, there's also Martin Atkins, what's it called, the five-pointed star or something like that. It's basically his tour routing strategy, where you kind of hit smaller markets that are close or surrounding a bigger market. So instead of going right to Chicago, maybe you play, an hour in any direction around that, and you build those markets so that when you finally go into the big city and have a big show, you can kind of draw the smaller fan base or the fan bases you've made in the smaller towns into the city to make it a successful event.
But it's tough to say without knowing more about their music. And, you know, if you're doing a great job booking and you get some great local acts and you're doing some research on those local acts, knowing they have a draw, that might be perfectly okay.
And I'm always one for, like, just going on an adventure. Like, if that's where the mindset of everyone in the band is, like, that's awesome. If people are at the breaking point and
yeah,
then don't do that.
Yeah, if someone in your band's saying, if we play one more show that nobody shows up to, don't do that five hour wait gig, because that might be the end of the band. Unless you're looking for a reason for that person to leave the band.
To quit.
then maybe that's a good thing. So it can go either way. All right. Let's go on to a call from Ron.
Hi, I just wanted to say I really liked I like your podcast. I'm an avid listener. My name's Ron. I'm calling from Maryland. The group I'm in is Breaking 12. So we're at breaking12.com. My idea for CD Baby is maybe an app made by CD Baby. And some of the features could be as simple as being able to download songs directly from CD Baby to that app, being able to play it on there, obviously. Any purchased songs that you get from CD Baby, you know, just have its own library, so to speak. And possibly even a radio station where it would play random new releases from CD Baby's, you know, collection and stuff like that. Something that, you know, people could go, oh, what's new out there on CD Baby and be able to click in on it. And then, I have a bunch of more ideas, but the last one I'll leave you with right now is a little section for the artist, something where we can check our information via the app instead of having to go online on a PC or something like that to, you know, dig up information. You know, just simple stuff. You know, did our song, did everything go well? Has it been finalized and all this other stuff? I just think a simple app like that, well, I don't know how simple it is, but an app like that I think would go a long, long way for CD Baby customers and for people that don't know about the company that should know about the company. So, again, Ron from Breaking12.com, thanks a lot, and I hope you have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Ron. There were some good ideas in there. And the reason why I was going to include his call was to explain why we haven't done some of those things. We've actually spent a large amount of time making our site mobile friendly on the artist account. So when you log in with your mobile phone into your artist account, a lot of it is responsive to your phone. So it formats like it should on a mobile device so you can see, and you can do a lot of that stuff, like accessing your account information already in a more mobile-friendly environment. The other stuff like downloads and just an app in general, the reason why we haven't done one is because managing and maintaining an app is such an undertaking that we decided would be just a distraction to the core services we need to provide independent artists, because you then have to constantly make sure it's up to date with the latest operating systems across so many different platforms. And it's just not core to what we do as far as helping artists get their music out there and make the most money from it. And we, you know, our feeling was, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I think also there's an editorial component that we're a little bit always anxious to engage with. Whereas, you know, like we get, I don't even know what it's up to now, you know, hundreds and hundreds of new releases every day. So that if you're starting to have to curate what gets featured, even if someone in that app could dial up, you know, I only want sci-fi retro 60s garage pop. There's still so much new thing, even in that new music, even in that tiny little genre, that we're going to be having to make decisions about what to show you as a listener and what to. So then that gets weird. You know, A, that's an undertaking, but B, we don't really want to be totally, what's the word, kind of curating for artists that we should be helping everyone. So
I just got a text from one of the other guys in Small Town Puts that they just heard our song on the radio in Atlanta, so they were excited.
And I'm still waiting actually, for my what's up.
I said, and the DJ actually said who it was too. It was one of our Christmas songs, which you know, we've paid radio promoters to get on the radio, and getting Christmas music on the radio is a huge challenge because you have such a short window of time.
That's awesome. I was gonna say, I'm still eagerly awaiting my Christmas song to be, it's been accepted on Pandora, but you know how it takes them a while to ingest it or whatever.
Yeah.
Once it's been. So I think I'm missing the boat on this season.
Next season.
Next, it's all going to be about season. My Christmas song next year.
I think I still have one of our albums that I need to get on Pandora, because I think when it came out, it was our EP. We didn't have CDs made of it. And at that time, I think the rule was you had to have it on CD, but they changed that. So I need to double check and see if that album's even on Pandora. Missed opportunity.
Get on it. Yeah.
I'm slacking. All right. We've got one last call, and here it is.
Hey, Kevin. Guys, it's CD Baby. This is Tori calling once again. I want to thank you for answering my question. I heard it. I heard you guys answer it. That was some great stuff, information that you gave me. I took a lot of notes for you guys answering that question for me. So I still have a little bit of a question here, still kind of negotiating with this label. So if they do keep the masters, my masters, what do – it doesn't sound like I stand a lot to gain from it, but what I'm wondering is what do I stand to lose from it, and what does this mean in the future for me musically? So if somebody wanted to use, for instance, one of my songs in a commercial or something – what does that mean for me? Does that mean that I have to go to the label to get that song? I couldn't just give them the song, the commercial people. I couldn't just negotiate that on my own. Could I just get that, give them that song and they could use it? Or I would have to get permission from this label. So anyway, just anything you could, you know, I'm a dummy when it comes to this kind of stuff. So anything you guys could give me once again would just be really awesome. You guys rock. Love the podcast. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Kevin, you're the perfect person to answer this question. have master recordings that are tied up in another label that...
Yeah, so Tori, once they own your masters, you can't do anything with it without their permission. So it would mean like you're suggesting going after sync placements. Well, for starters, you would have to get their permission to use for say a movie wanted to use your recording. Well, you don't own that recording, they do. And they would have to get permission from the label in order to use that master recording, and the label would get the money for that master recording. So you would not get the money for that recording usage. You might still get the money for the song half of the sync fee. Because there's two parts to a sync license. There's the master recording usage, and there's the original composition. And so the movie studio or the TV studio has to pay for both. But in your situation, you may only now own the song. Also, they could deny it. They could say, we don't want that to be used there. And in general, you don't have the ability to pursue commerce with that master recording without the permission of the label. They own it. It's their property. So in your case where you said you're not getting much from it, then there's no reason to do it because you're tying up a lot of your rights. And depending on this label, if they're sticklers, they could hold on to them for a really long time. Now, if they're some labels are sort of loosey-goosey about it and they'll be like, oh, you can have it back after a couple of years, you know, some of these indie labels are doing that. But, you know, I wouldn't risk it unless you know you're really getting something of value back, or put it in the contract where you the rights to the master recordings revert back to you after a set time.
Yeah, and then just in terms of that one example of sync licensing, you would be kind of giving up one of the main benefits of being, when a music supervisor wants to get a song, they want to get it quick. So they want to go to someone who has the ability to sign off on the composition and the master recording. So suddenly you're splitting those rights between yourself and a label. Now this person has to get two permissions or three or however many people are involved that own the rights. So yeah, you're taking away a benefit that you have as an indie to act quickly, I guess, is what I'm saying.
The real thing with a label these days is that you need to make sure that you are getting some sort of benefit that you can't get on your own. So if a label is coming to you and saying, hey, we'll get you on iTunes and Spotify and Apple Music, well, you can already do that yourself. There's no reason for that to be the sole benefit. And if the benefit is that they can get your music to a broader audience, which ideally that would be the benefit, they need to have some concrete ideas of how that's going to happen. And then you need to do some analysis. Well, if they only grow my fan base by 1,000 people, could I have done that myself and made all the money? Or if it's a case where it's like, hey, they're going to really broaden my reach, I'm going to take a hit on the revenue for a while, but my long-term plan is to capitalize on that larger fan base and continue the growth of my career. Those are the things that you have to have in mind. You know,
and back, going back to what you said at the beginning of the show, like, is this a label that's in a position to spend big money and draw on all their connections? Because to break a major artist, it was, what, 500,000 to 2 million. Like, what is this small label going to be able to do for you?
Yeah. And, you know, I've been in some conversations with labels that, you know, using air quotes, since I've been an independent artist, where really the only benefit they really had was to basically get you on iTunes and put you on their website. That's not needed anymore. You know, being on a part of a bigger website, you know, like a label website, if they've got a following that puts you alongside some other artists, that's could be helpful, but is it really worth what your trade-off is? So that's my opinion. It's you, with the master recording, that's your property. And it's so weird now for us as small town poets to look back, and we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of our debut release. And when you go to our website and you go to places like CD Baby and Bandcamp, places where we're selling our music, all those old catalog items are absent. So there's like this big chasm in our career because we don't own them. We can't include them in places for sale without the label permission. So those are things that you got to think about. It's your property when you own the master recordings, but if not, it's their property, and it's really weird, in my opinion, to not get something really meaningful for that trade-off. And that's what I have to say about that. And he was referring to, he called earlier on an earlier episode of the podcast, and we answered part of his question, and that was a follow-up question.
I knew you'd give the cautionary perspective for sure.
Well, that brings us to the end of all the questions and calls we have. Thanks so much for everybody who called in. And there was a few other questions that didn't make it. There's one in particular that an artist emailed me a bunch of links to Reddit, where they just randomly posted on Reddit and some interesting things happened. Nothing, you know, it wasn't mind-blowing, but some interesting things happened. And then he did it again and nothing happened and was curious on our take. And I was looking at it going, this might be more than just a listener feedback show. We might have to do like either a marketing episode about it and use this as a test case. So we'll get to that in the new year. And there's a few other questions that we'll get around to. But thanks so much for all the calls and emails. You can call us and ask your question or leave a comment, weigh in on something that somebody was asking about. Or just tell us a success story or a funny story. We like them all. 360-524-2209. 360-524-2209. Or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And then you can find show notes, back episodes, links to other stuff at cdbabypodcast.com. So check all that out. You know, it's the holiday season coming up. We have 177 episodes outside of this one that you can go back and listen to, and lots of great stuff. So you can binge the podcast over your Christmas break. So recommended listening. So, all right. Well, thanks so much for making it through another year of podcasting with us. We have lots of good stuff on the horizon for the new year. And take the time this holiday season to write music. That's what I'm planning on doing. Writing and recording music. Take some time to enjoy your family. Get off social media for a while. Nothing good happens on there anyway. Write some music. Get inspired. Use the time to really get focused for 2017, because I think it's going to be a good year. And we'll see you then.
See ya. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.